meow, meow.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees centimeters to get the sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it, Phil?
Oh, I can feel it. I can feel it tonight.
And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So how you doing? I haven't talked to you in like a whole week.
I know, right? Man. I'm doing pretty well. I was actually sick last week, so I was a little bit loopy from chugging Dayquil all day. But I've bounced back, and I'm feeling a lot better.
That was me about a month or so ago. So anyway, special news. The fifth annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest will be going on June 22nd through the 26th at the Circle Pine Center. And the early bird alternative currency discount is expiring at the end of April. So I think it's come May 1st, it will go up to regular prices. Granted, the regular prices are still quite affordable. They're very reasonable. But if you want to get that early bird discount, you need to do it soon. So round up your friends and family and get them registered right away. And you can go to mplfest.org for that. And as I mentioned, it starts on Thursday, June 22nd, and it will be in the morning, and it will be going until Monday morning, June 26th. So it's getting longer, not shorter, unlike other festivals.
Sweet. That's guaranteed to be a heck of a time.
Yes, yes, and there are a couple of confirmed guests that I've been told I can announce. If you would like to meet Jeffrey Tucker, he's supposed to be there over the weekend, and also Donna Martin, who is a, I guess, radical homeschooling, home birthing, free range, kid raising parent.
So yeah, I met her in Acapulco a couple of years ago. She's pretty cool.
Okay, cool, yeah. I'm not super familiar with all the things that she covers. So why don't you tell us a little bit about her?
Oh, well, I'm not super familiar with her online presence. I just, you know, met her once. But she, okay, you know, she's doing the peaceful parenting thing. That's her main gig. Yeah.
All right, so that looks to be pretty exciting. And then not to mention there'll be a gaggle of fiends there. Or what's the term for a bunch of fiends? A gaggle, ooh, a murder, I don't know. A herd?
I don't know.
There'll be a bunch of fiends running around.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, everybody get there. It's gonna be fun. It's gonna be a blast.
Absolutely. And there's going to be an assault kitchen and everything.
Yes. MPLfest.org. Get your tickets. Register yourselves. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes required or recommended. We don't really require stuff. So anyway, I'm kind of a little bit, how could I put it? PO'd about this video that I just recently saw. It may have been covered earlier in the week. From the great liberty-loving state of Arizona, there is a new porn tax that has been proposed, and they have gone as far as to call it the Human Trafficking Prevention Act, because, well, one, they want money, but two, they claim that pornography leads to sex trafficking.
Which is basically the opposite of the truth.
Right, right. Because in reality, you could do porn anywhere, so you don't have to, like, move people and smuggle them across borders or anything like that. Unless, of course, you want better scenery for your shoots. But it's really reaching there, and it really just strikes me as a money grab. So
Well, the theory that the lady was trying to push for it was that pornography is an addiction, and like,
yes,
other addictions, you just need more and more and more until you eventually start smuggling women over the border to you know, sell them into sex slavery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she had mentioned that it's like once you have that first time, that you know, it's never as good again. You're trying to get that first time back of watching porn, and it's an addiction like a drug.
Yeah,
And everybody knows that when you're addicted to something, you know, you start stealing, selling your stuff, trying to get more. And eventually, people are probably going to be performing sex acts to get porn money.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So.
You've changed my mind.
Ban it. So anyway, yeah, she is with the Arizona Anti-Trafficking Group or something. I can't remember exactly what they're called. But, the whole stealing underpants leads to giant profits. I mean, the whole porn leads to sex trafficking. I'm a little bit confused about where they come up with all that stuff. It really strikes me as they're just making claims and not doing anything to back them up. They're just, you know, like words are tumbling out of their mouths, landing on a table, and people are expected to accept that as like gospel. And it's like, behold the power of government and its criers, its heralds.
Right. Well, the only thing I could kind of see in their logic is the implication that if you get into a porn addiction, then you might get to the point where it's just not enough anymore, and you have to go to prostitutes, and now you're paying prostitutes for sex. In other words, stimulating the economy. But
so in our words, stopping the sex trafficking and the human smuggling, the whole purpose of that is kind of like the tariff to keep foreign goods out of the economy. So it's a protection racket for domestic prostitutes. Is that where you're coming from with that?
I don't know.
There's a 20% tariff on foreign nookie.
Right. Well, it's really an argument. Even if you follow the line of thought they're trying to push, it's really an argument.
Which I don't.
For right, but if neither do I. But if you do, it's really an argument for legalizing prostitution rather than an argument for placing a tariff on porn, because the issue is the trafficking and the violence and the sex slavery and whatnot. But that really happens because. You know, the same reason why there's so much violence in the drug trade. It's because of the prohibition of prostitution to begin with. That's what's causing the violence in the escort industry. So
yeah, because once again, it creates an illicit market. Some of the problems that are associated with prostitution, and if you go to Nevada, like outside of Vegas, where prostitution is legal, you don't. When you go to those brothels, because that's how they make their living, and they have to survive by their reputation, because it's not fly by night, hop in the back of a van at those places. From what I understand, they're pretty swanky. And then also, if you go to like the red light districts over in Europe, some of those are kind of swanky. But before you go in there, you get checked out, and the girls also get checked out on a regular basis. They go get their medical cards and everything like that, and they do a lot to prevent the spread of sexually transmitted diseases, which is quite common with prostitution and also the drug trade, because of providing sexual favors to get drug money. So when you have an environment that actually promotes the safer sex, the not having the, you know, the getting checked out, the not having the STDs going untreated and stuff like that, you don't get into these problems.
Right.
Let's not
claim utopia or anything. Obviously, there are going to be some skeevy, lower grade areas in the market where this may continue happening, just like it does now, except it would happen a lot less because this incentive would not be removed. This incentive to provide a quality product at risk of something like liability or just to keep more customers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's like an on-the-job injury. You can't work when you're hurt, so if you can't work, you can't earn a living.
Right, and absolutely.
For a prostitute, an STD is a on-the-job injury. Now, I don't know if it's OSHA-recordable, right. And if they go out there and do corrective training and stuff like that. Right? These are the safe work methods for prostitution. But anyway, so side note, I guess the IRS had confiscated a brothel out in Nevada, and under the regulations, they had to operate it in order to recoup the lost revenue that they felt that they were owed in back taxes, and they went out of business. So Judge Napolitano explained it: only the government could have a brothel selling sex and whiskey to truck drivers out in the desert and go bankrupt.
Right. Absolutely. So. It's like the joke about the Sahara. If the Sahara started having a government quota on sand, it'd be out of sand within a few months.
Yeah. So anyway, I guess in a nutshell to describe this, little review that they're saying that porn is a public health problem, and they want to charge a tax on it. Now, I don't know if they're gonna use this tax to like provide medical care for people that get injured watching porn. You know, like they'll come up with a carpal tunnel syndrome slush fund or relief fund, something like that. I'm not really sure.
That's why my wrist hurts so much.
It could be, yeah. So, and it's not from being a computer geek. Well, at least not the normal type of computer geek. Well, actually, normal computer geeks are probably... Well, anyway, let's get off of that. So anyway, they want to put a porn filter on there, which will prevent people from being able to look at it. But you can pay a ransom and jailbreak your phone by paying $20 per device. So in order to eliminate sex trafficking and in order to prevent addiction, because these things are so darn horrible that they must be stopped, they want to put this porn filter on there. But it's not so horrible that you can't get away without having it if you pay $20 per device. A whopping $20. Who's the welfare whores now?
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Thank you for being a fiend. You may know the show is Triggerweens. We're saying worms and your new bigger buttons on. And if you threw a party and invited every yak you knew, you would see we'd still follow the NAP, and we're covered by BIPCOT. Thank you for being a fiend.
Welcome back. Lou stepped out for a minute, so I'm going to be entertaining you for a bit. So we found out over the break that there's a term for a large number of ferrets or a group of ferrets, and it's called a business of ferrets. This is thanks to our great board op, Jason. And I think that's a fitting name. Either business or gander. Business of fiends or gander of fiends will be showing up at the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest.
A pod. So
what do you think, Lou?
A pod, a business.
A pod, a bunch. Of fiends. A bunch.
Yeah, we don't want to have a murder of fiends.
That might be a little too risque.
How many is that? I mean, is that like a flock of crows or?
Yeah, is it just two or more? I don't know. I think it's a flock. I think it's two or more, but I don't know.
I need to Google.
Yeah.
How many crows in a murder?
Hey, bro, how many ferrets you got? None your business.
How many crows does it take to make a murder? There's no fixed number. One might as well ask how many hairs a man has to lose before he is declared a bald man. Huh. Okay. Oh, that's interesting.
That's a strange analogy to pick out for that.
Well, you won't get this type of valuable information on Hannity or Mark Levin. I'll tell you that right now. So anyway, Absolutely. Yeah, we're talking
certainly
about,
won't get it on Bill O'Reilly.
Oh. I heard he's getting a podcast.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, I hope his audio doesn't suck. But anyway, we were talking about the new porn tax, and I see it as an opportunity to just get more money, because that's what governments do. I mean, they're filthy parasites. They are the prostitutes, except you don't get to enjoy their prostitution. You do get bleeped, though. But anyway.
Yeah, they're prostitutes, except they get you.
Yeah.
If I can't say the word, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. So anyway, I recently saw this commercial. It's for T-Mobile, and it's like, my God, it is getting so obvious, you know, about the whole taxation stuff and the ridiculousness of all the fees and fines and taxes and all this sort of stuff. And this little girl has a lemonade stand, and this guy, and it says lemonade $1. And this guy goes up and he says, I'll take a glass of lemonade. And she's like, here you go, sir. That will be $2.37 or some amount like that. And he's like, but the sign says $1. And she's like, well, you got all these different fees, you know, like the standing on the lawn fee, the poison control fee, and just all these different things that are added in there. And some of them are pretty ridiculous. And it's just really getting so obvious that taxation is theft, and that is, I mean, it's just revenue gathering. It serves no purpose other than to exploit the common man out of what he was allowed to keep out of his paycheck. I guess that would be a good way to describe it. So anyway, one of my friends from Canuckistan sent me this article a couple weeks ago. I meant to get to it last week, but I think we went off on belt-fed tangents and talked about other stuff. So anyway, this is from the CBC.ca. It says, man who gave $100 to kids lemonade stand says cash was just a good deed. Winnipeg police say they want to talk to Marcel Bassett about the incident. Now, you're probably thinking, oh, he gave him $100. What sort of nefarious things does he have in mind? Is he going to, you know, get all handsy and, you know, act like a Republican former Speaker of the House? Now, we don't know this. But anyway, the article says, a Winnipeg man who gave a group of Winnipeg kids $100 at a lemonade stand along with a business card for an anti-tax website is speaking out about what he says is a misunderstanding following concerns from parents. But police say the incident, while not illegal, was inappropriate and are looking to speak with Marcel Bassett to warn him not to do it again. Bassett, who identifies as Marcel of the family Bassett, I think that's like some kind of Canuckistani sovereign citizen whack job. I don't know. Anyway, said Monday he was disturbed to read concerns from parents in Winnipeg's Wolseley neighborhood who called police after he gave $100 to a group of five kids last Thursday. It was meant to be a really warm, good-feeling thing, Bassett said. And we'll be right back, because we've been taxed for time.
Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Are you tired of driving your kids to Gigi Allen's grave only to be unable to find the grave because some dick stole the headstone? Well, there is a solution. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app for Android will give you door-to-grave directions. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app uses advanced GPS protocols to guide you with voices to the exact patch of dust and grass where Gigi took his final dirt nap. Bring the kids. Do some needle drops at the Gigiest place on Earth. Gigi always had a huge underground following, but it's even bigger now that he's literally underground. So it's no surprise that lots of folks today take a pilgrimage to Gigi's grave. But getting there wasn't easy. Until this app. Forget Graceland, forget the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Those are plastic places for old people with jobs. Hell, even CBGB's is gone, and that former hallowed ground is now a yuppie coffee bar. The real rock and roll Mecca is an unmarked patch of grass in Littleton, New Hampshire, and our free app will show you how to get there. Get the Find Gigi Allen's Grave app today. Even if you're not planning to go there soon, the app is fun. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License, and it's from the good people at Beast Lick Internet Policy Commission Outreach Team, who also brought you Fiend Phone, the Freedom Fiends radio app, BIPCOT, Meow Bit, and of course, Truth, Justice, American Way. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app is free. Get it today on the Google Play Store or on Amazon. Your family will thank you. And don't forget to rate and review. Worms, eating Gigi Allen's face.
Freedom Fiends. So anyway, we're talking about this guy up in Kanuckistan who, he's an anti-tax protester, and I think he's one of these, you've got fringe on your flag, sovereign citizen types.
Oh boy.
So, anyway. Wait,
do the Canadians have fringe on their flags in the courtrooms?
I don't know. But anyway, so he gave $20 each to five kids that were doing a lemonade stand. So anyway, the meat and potatoes of the lemonade stand story is Toby McRae said her two sons were selling lemonade at the corner of Lipton Street and Westminster Avenue last Thursday along with two friends when a man handed them five $20 bills with a card that explained how to make your money with your own society. Wow, almost sounds like an anarchist, but anyway.
I looked at the card and it didn't even say that. It said it didn't say how. It actually said that in like word for word how to make money with your own society. It didn't explain okay. how. It just said it on the back. I think he was advertising an event where they discussed this stuff.
Okay, so maybe they have fringe on their black and gold flags, but anyway. McRae right. called police after her son told her he saw the man get into a white van down the street. No mention of whether there's windows or not. Bissette said he never got into a van and wants to set the record straight about the incident to put parents' minds at ease. I don't want them thinking there's a predator in the neighborhood when there's not. I mean, there might be, but it's not me, he told CBC Monday. Bissette is a member of the Peacemaker Society, a group that doesn't believe in paying taxes, and said he simply wants to spread that message while supporting the young entrepreneurs. I just walked up, told them it was for the lemonade stand, that I was proud of them for being entrepreneurs, that I've run stuff through my life, and here's $20 each and a card so you guys can learn with your family. So apparently, I don't think the cops and the family members are too worried about him being a predator. I think it's mostly about spreading this message of taxation is theft because it is Kanuckistan. It's like a special breed of socialism up there.
Yeah. It's almost like North Seattle.
It's Northern Seattle with snow.
Right.
So... anyway, Bissette told CBC he does not pay taxes and that it wasn't his intention to scare any parents, but in hindsight, he understands why parents were concerned. The kids in the moment were really excited. I think it's once they got home and there was a misunderstanding with their parents, perhaps, for the motivation of the incident. Winnipeg police spokesman Jay Murray said the incident is troubling, and while not illegal, police want to talk to Bissette. Well, obviously, you can't have somebody telling kids that they deserve to keep their earnings.
Right.
It's one thing for him to approach an adult and kind of communicate those beliefs, but I don't think it's appropriate for him to talk to minors about this, he said.
Yeah, how dare you tell children that stealing is wrong?
Yeah, you can't be doing this kind of thing. Murray said Bissette is known to police and officers are still trying to find him to talk about the incident. What they're looking for him, he's like right in the picture on the article holding a cat. So...
well, I mean, they probably lifted that off his Facebook or something, I would assume.
Well, that's a possibility. But anyway, yeah, we can't have him talking about taxation being theft and stuff. Wait till the indoctrination is complete. Wait until they're adults and properly conditioned.
Yeah.
So, have you had, before you got into the liberty mindset, did you ever run into anybody that would tell you taxation is theft and just different liberty messages that you looked at them like they're crazy?
Not that I recall. I had a friend who was pushing Ron Paul for a little bit, but he was pushing Ron Paul because he was essentially just the kid, not Ron Paul, but the kid that was pushing him was essentially just a neocon that was tired of how clearly corrupt most of the neocons running for president were. So he wasn't, you know, actually a liberty lover. He was just a right winger. But other than that, I don't like. He took me to some of the Ron Paul rallies, and there were some people speaking of about libertarianism there. But I don't think I ever got the taxation as theft message and such. But the taxation as theft as a meme didn't really come about until after 2012, and
yeah,
by then
it was just a year or two ago that it came out.
Right.
So when did you get on the Ron Paul train?
I was never on the Ron Paul train. I voted for him in the primaries in 2008. This was back when I still voted. Because I don't know if you remember, but at that time, Florida had this whole situation with the Democratic primaries where they were trying to push their primaries up ahead of everybody to make the state more relevant, or to make the state Democrats more relevant, and they were violating DMC rules or DNC, sorry, not DMC, but
Run DMC rules. Run DMC.
Yeah, exactly. But they were violating the rules, so they got kicked out of the Democratic Committee, the DNC, actually said that the Florida is out of the primaries and they don't get to have primaries anymore. So I switched my voting registration to Republican because I figured if I can't vote in the Democratic primaries, I might as well vote in the Republican ones and try to affect it there. And I voted Ron Paul there. But I ultimately, and I'm very sad to say this, I was duped, but I voted for Obama in the overall election.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I didn't vote for him the second time, though. I at least learned my lesson. I wasn't that dumb.
Who did you vote for in 2012?
I don't think I was voting in 2012. So I don't think I voted for anybody. If I did vote, it would have been for Gary Johnson. Which, again, I'm sorry, I was duped. I didn't vote for him the second time.
My God, you get duped more than the Democratic Congress on Iraq by George W. Bush, of all people. So
no, yeah. that's insulting, Lou. I'm not that bad, but
I got tricked again. I voted. I had a moment of weakness, and they told me the things I wanted to hear, and I really liked that candidate because he had electrolytes, and that's what I crave. And
and like I said, I don't actually remember whether or not I voted in 2012. I just know for a little while I was supporting Gary Johnson, but 2012 is when I realized that I was an anarchist, and I think I stopped voting before the 2012 election, but I just don't remember.
All right, for me, the last general election that I voted in was 2010. I did vote for Ron Paul in the primary, and after he lost, I was just like, meh, I'm not messing with anymore, I'm done. And when the general was coming up, a lot of people were slipping. They're like, oh man, we gotta vote for Romney to keep Obama out of there. And I'm like, if you vote for Romney, you're gonna get Obama, just a different colored version of it. And yeah. You know, it's the same nonsense that happens every 4 years. You know, like with this past election, somebody had come out that says, all right, look, all these candidates suck, but this isn't the time to go experimenting around with third parties. Let's do that next election season. And, you know, because this is just too important, we got to, you know, get one of these criminals over the other criminal. And
yeah, well, if you'll notice, every single election seems to be the most important election, and the next election won't be as important.
Yeah, and every single election is when it's not the time to go experimenting around with third parties and all that other stuff. Right. So every 4 years, they say, okay, let's try this in 4 years, and then 4 years comes around, okay, let's try this in the next one. And it's kind of like a weight loss exercise program. You know, well, I'll start tomorrow. Oh, I'll start on Monday. Oh, I'm gonna go on the weekend. And, you know, it just never ends. I can't even use the word that I was going to use, but anyway, so yeah, it doesn't work out. But anyway, in 2008, I actually voted for McCain, and I liked McCain because of in 2000, he just wasn't really that crazy back in 2000. He made a lot more sense, but George W. Bush out-Jesused him in the campaign, in the primary, so Bush got the nomination. And I was a little bit bummed out, so I'm like, yeah, McCain the war hero, because I was a neocon at the time, and I guess I was bloodthirsty, but I don't think I was as bloodthirsty as the typical neocon today. But I did spout off with a bunch of the usual lines and everything. We're fighting them there to keep from fighting them here, and the proof will be in the form of a mushroom cloud. And I seriously think that the NSA may have been reading my propaganda emails to my other right wing friends, or when I was trying to convince my liberal anti war friends, that there needed to be more war. But
extracting the slogans. Ooh, this is a good one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So NSA is like, all right, yeah, Luke came up with a good one. So we're gonna run with this in the next press conference. But anyway, and incidentally, it was my anti-war friends that helped to get me away from being a neocon, or being quite as much of the neocon, because I just really couldn't answer the questions honestly that they were asking me about all these foreign wars. And after Obama went in office and they became neocons again, I really wanted to return the favor, but they just weren't having it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of a similar experience with me on the economic end. I would get into arguments with my, funny enough, my statistics teacher, my first statistics teacher in college, and he was a staunch libertarian, and we'd get into arguments about economics, and he would always just floor me with, he would probe my views on that, and I would never be able to answer appropriately and honestly that in a way that supported my conclusion. But I will say, and I am at least proud of this fact, I was never fooled by Hillary Clinton. I always knew that woman was an evil hag, even when I was a hardcore, like, almost socialist left-winger. Wow. I always knew that she was evil.
Yeah, her theme song, "Pleased to Meet You, Won't You Guess My Name." Hey, we'll be back. Right. Or Frida Fiends.
Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
And go on the sidebar of the Freedom Fiend site. We now have Amazon links for Amazon US, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada due to popular demand. Worms.
With the Freedom Fiends. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Phil. and I'm quitting my new glasses. I just got new glasses today. It's a little bit stronger prescription, and it's fun trying to adjust to this because it's like progressive lenses. So it's essentially a trifocal. So,
okay.
Yeah. So every time I get a new prescription, it takes a little while to adjust to it. When I first got them, it was just absolutely horrible. It was miserable. But anyway,
I hate new glasses. So I hate that experience when you get dizzy and all that.
I'm not getting dizzy. It's just, I can possibly get dizzy, but anyhow. Going back to the Liberty stories, I never really ran into a whole lot of hardcore libertarians. Every once in a while, you see the people that say, in the drug war, or in the war on pot, legalize it, tax it, and regulate it. The standard nonsense stuff. But I'd never heard anything about, just completely end the drug war. And I thought drugs were bad. I thought that they were bad because they were illegal and that they should be illegal because they were illegal. And but here's the thing. I knew a lot of people that smoked weed. One of my old roommates, he smoked it every now and again, and one of my old girlfriends, she smoked it fairly often, and they weren't bad people, they weren't evil, and had they been locked up and put in a cage, I would have been like, man, I miss them, that's horrible. But then I probably was done something really stupid and evil and said, well, should have obeyed the law. If they obeyed the law, they'd still be free in the land of the free.
Right.
If you don't obey all the rules, you're not really free. If you don't follow all the restrictions, you're not really free.
Yeah.
So.
I don't understand what's so hard to understand. All you have to do is lick the boot, and you won't go to jail.
Look, there's not a problem in this world that can't be solved with a lot more obedience to government. Get it? Got it? Good. Be obedient.
Exactly.
Because North Korea
is proof of that.
Yeah, that's how you're free, is by being obedient. So, but one of the things, there's something on the ballot here. It was like, would you support a constitutional amendment to prohibit gay marriage? And this was probably early to mid 2000s, something like that. And I was still neocon Republican. Big government conservative type, and but I voted no. I don't support that. What do I care who gets married? I'm not going to get involved in a gay marriage. So why should I have any say about it? And so I voted against it. I felt really proud of myself. I'm like, yeah, I'm this kind of liberty minded. And a couple of years later, I came to realize that it's really not a libertarian position to vote on somebody else's marriage, whether it's to support it or not.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have as focused of a story as that. For me, when I was a leftist, it was really just because I hated rich people. So I had to, and my dad, he's pretty pro union, and he was always a Democrat, and I got a lot from him, and I think I got a certain amount of, I guess, hateful envy, partly from him, but I think mostly because of media and movies and TV shows and stuff. And I used to take the sort of radical kind of look up to a lot of the radical elements in radical characters in TV shows and movies and whatnot. But for me, it was just like I had that typical leftist assumption that if you have a lot of money, you must be doing something evil to get it. And I just eventually kind of broke out of that dumb mindset that everybody who has something must have done nefarious deeds in order to receive it.
Now, did you apply that to the leftist politicians like Bernie Sanders with his three vacation homes and all that other stuff?
That didn't even really come into my mind. It didn't even occur to me that they were wealthy. strangely enough.
Look at that disconnect. Let's delve into this more into your therapy session in the second hour. More Freedom Fiends. We'll be back. Thank you for sharing, Phil.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Meow. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
And to our stations that are just picking us up for the second hour, or listeners that are just tuning in, or whatever, however you're just now getting here. Special announcement, the 5th Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest will be going on from Thursday, June 22nd through Monday, June 26th. So yes, it's longer and stronger than last year, one day longer. Get your friends and family registered and rounded up at mplfest.org. And the early bird discount, early bird alternative currency discount, will be ending April 30th. So come May 1st, it goes up to regular pricing, which the regular pricing is still very affordable, particularly for a longer event like that. But get that savings now while you can. So, and there'll be a business of fiends, a gaggle, a gander, a pod, a bunch of fiends. So there'll be a bunch of fiends there, and Jeffrey Tucker and Donna Martin are confirmed guests for the weekend. So anyway, you know what? We didn't talk about what we're going to talk about for the second hour here. We kind of got off on like a how did you find liberty therapy session in the last segment.
Yeah. Well, I think I pretty much finished my story there. But Michael wanted me to get into some speak about some bad stats and presentations among journalists and some social science presentations and whatnot. So you want me to go ahead and jump into that?
Please go ahead.
All right. So I put together a few things that I thought of that you see a lot in news and frankly a lot in some YouTubers. And one of the things that news establishments like to do is they mess with visualizations when they're presenting data. And one of the things they do a lot is they'll change the scale on bar charts or pie charts. They'll put out pie charts that don't add up to 100. Now, a pie chart is, of course, a proportional visualization. And so everything in the pie chart should add up to 100% or 1 if you're doing it in proportions. But a lot of times you'll see a news organization put up a pie chart with like 60% of people say this and 70% of people say this and put it in a pie chart. And that does not add up to 100% of people, which doesn't make sense. But another thing that happens a lot is just context and interpretation will be just completely bonkers.
Let me interrupt you for a second. Do you consider the not adding up to 100% to be just bias or just really shoddy work? Or a little bit of both?
Usually that is just shoddy work. It's just journalists that don't know how to math.
Okay.
Really?
Because they're not mathletes, is what you're saying. Because right. I remember in the 2012 election, and this is when I was kind of a Ron Paul supporter. I was already on the road to anarchy, and he was kind of like my detour. for a little while. But I remember watching the different reports of polling data and everything else, and they show first place was so-and-so, third place was so-and-so, fourth, fifth, and Ron Paul was in second place, and he was just like written out of the polls like some of the Russian, some of the Soviet leaders in their history books. He was an unperson.
Right. Yeah, I can't think of anything specific they did there, but a lot of times what you'll see is like the percentages will add up to 101% or 99%, and that's actually not a mistake. That's just an issue of a rounding error. Okay. So a rounding error might actually push your percentages just a smidge over 100 or under 100. But if it's more than 1%, then they're just messing the stuff up. Now with the Ron Paul thing, a lot of that is probably
that was blatant.
Yeah, if they were messing with it, it would have probably been on the poll itself, like wording questions in a certain way that drives a certain answer. So they may have been wording the poll in a manner that that maybe people were disincentivized to pick Ron Paul. Maybe it said, bearing in mind these people have no chance, or something like that. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. But what was happening is Ron was getting second place, and they just weren't mentioning it. They weren't reporting it. It was like, here's everybody else.
Oh, okay. Oh yeah. So if Ron was getting second place in the I remember what you're talking about now. But yeah, Ron was getting second place in the votes, and they just left him off of the thing, and somehow the vote, all of the voting percentages only added up to like 60%. Why? Oh, where'd the other 40% go? Well, Ron Paul, he was left out.
I think what they did, I'm pretty sure it was Fox, and I'm going by memory here. It said first place, like mittens or something like that. Third place, Santorum, whatever. Fourth place, whatever, Neocon it was. So they just completely left him off. If you wanted to find him, you had to go to the memory hole.
Right.
So, yeah, anyway, all right. Sorry for interrupting. Get back to your story.
That would kind of fall back into the context and interpretation. We left him off because he's essentially not a viable candidate. That's why he came in second place. but another thing that you'll see a lot is the context will be left out. Like they'll rescale an axis but they won't actually specify that it's rescaled, or they'll put certain labels, like have a chart showing a correlative chart or something like that, and not actually say what the variables are, and have an implication that it means one thing in the title when it may not. That's kind of abstract. I don't have a specific example, but I can give you another interpretation example. When I was a few years ago, Larkin Rose, who is a fairly prominent name in the liberty movement among anarchists, he put out a question. He said, "Hey, who? All the people that follow my Facebook page, tell me what year you came to liberty." And people put in the years, and I went and I web scraped it to put it into a visualization, and I just threw the visualization on to a comment, and he posted it on his Facebook page, and he made a very, very overly exuberant interpretation of it, because the chart presented exponential growth, but of course it was only among people that followed his page, and it was like from 1960s up to 2012, and right around 2012, it started really jumping up like an exponential curve. And he read that as, he read into it as saying, see, the population of anarchists is not only growing, but it's growing exponentially. And what he didn't account for is the fact that it was a very weighted sample. There was no randomness in the sample. It was all taken from people who are fans of him. And
well, that's everybody in the liberty movement, right?
Right, yeah. But even then, you know, you're not looking at it as a proportion of the population. You're just looking at raw numbers. And so the interpretation he made was wildly optimistic. Now, there's some benefit to the chart did show or did have a little bit of implication towards a large uptick in fan base, but it also could very well have been completely explained by the fact that Facebook was gaining popularity in that time span too, in the time span which it was really growing. So it could just be that, well, I don't know.
Well, Facebook has certainly helped to spread anarchism. I mean, there's a lot of people that have come across the ideas of liberty just by interacting with others of that mindset. I know that it helped to push me over the edge.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that. So I agree to a certain extent that the anarcho-capitalism and voluntarianism have been growing at a much faster pace over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years. But the interpretation he made was not valid from the chart that he was making it off of. And also it was, you know, it was generally just optimistic anyway. And that goes into the validity thing. A lot of times, you know, the interpretation he made may have been valid off of a random sample or off of a, or a general population, you know, survey. It would have had more validity to it. But among the population that he was sampling from, not only was it a targeted survey, as far as targeted to a certain population, it was also a convenience sampling in which so it's going to have a certain it's going to suffer from response bias for people, you know, who actually answers the survey and contributes their data point. And that's going to affect the randomness of the sample itself, which is going to affect what type of inferential or what type of inference you can make out of it.
So garbage in, garbage out.
Well, it wasn't garbage in; it was just a bad interpretation.
Yeah, but you do have limited information there in general.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Yeah, bring us back, man. Bring us back.
And we are back. So, before the break, we were talking about some bad stat issues, and I got into a situation that I had been in with Larkin Rose. I actually want to clarify something I said before. I kind of misspoke about it. I said his analysis may have been more valid had it been a random sample and sampled better. And that's what I mean by that is you would have been able to do an inferential analysis. Now, you'd still want to do something like a hypothesis test or a confidence analysis, actually it would be more like a regression or time series analysis, if you look at it. But
and I want to that would require a different thing. When I say garbage in, garbage out, I was talking about the fact that it was just his followers, and it wasn't a very good sampling. It was like you said, just his Facebook followers. So you're not having any other types of groups out there. It's limited to that small number, and that's pretty common with most of these surveys, because it depends upon the people who answer it. And when you're dealing with like the phone surveys, that tends to be the older people that still have home phones. I think the surveyors are starting to call, well, they're calling cell phones a little bit now, but for the most part, it's the people that answer it are the people that don't hang up on telemarketers or survey takers. So that tells you a little something right there. But anyway,
it's a type of sampling bias. I believe it's called response bias because it's who responds to the survey. So there's a difference. There are two terms that apply to this. So you have descriptive analysis and you have inferential analysis. And a descriptive analysis is only an analysis that describes the sample in only the sample in which you get from which you get data. But an inferential analysis takes that descriptive analysis in the sample and applies it to the population as a whole that it was drawn from. So what I gave him was a descriptive chart, and he made an invalid inferential interpretation of it. if that's not too lingo-y or jargon-ish, and hopefully it's not. But this is something that you see oftentimes when you see survey data presented in journals and stuff, because people who do journalism and videos and media and things really don't. Often they just don't have a good grasp on statistics and proper analysis techniques.
Well, statistically, 92% of all journalists are below average.
Right. Yeah. Well, just think that if you look at the IQ tests, 50% of the world has below average IQ. What's with that?
Oh my God.
I know.
Bunch of dummies. That needs to get improved.
Right? The government has to do something about this.
Yes. Yeah, they need to ban pornography because people are spending so much time looking at porn that they're not learning stuff, which leads to sex trafficking and addiction. But anyway, so any more to cover on the statistics?
Oh, I've actually got a bunch more.
Knock yourself out. Yak away.
Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff to talk about with regression, and regression is something that is abused quite a lot in my opinion in econometrics. So this is actually one of my gripes with econometrics is, from what I've seen, it seems to lower requirements for model fitting. So in econometric analysis of a regression model will take out certain significant factors, but it won't have, at least what from the models I've seen, they won't have as strict of a goodness of fit measure. So the model may not actually fit the data as well as required for a good model to actually have those significance values for each of the factors to be valid. And what that means is you may have certain a cause and effect, one thing affecting the outcome that you're trying to establish, that may look a lot higher or look like it has much more of an effect, but if you actually look at the line that it shows through the data, it doesn't really go through the data. It's just better than nothing, and that ends up I think fooling a lot of people.
Hey, we'll be back after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Freedom Fiends, and we are back. So, Lou,
yes.
Did you know
probably
that, well, the total revenue generated by arcades, by video game arcades, correlates with the number of computer science doctorates awarded in the U.S.? And this very high correlation, the correlation is like 98.5%.
Really?
Yes.
Now, does that actually mean anything?
No. Absolutely not. Here's another one. You know, the divorce rate in Maine correlates at a 99% with the per capita consumption of margarine.
I did hear that. Did yes. you know that 100% of divorces start in marriage?
Absolutely. That, I did not, but that makes sense.
It's 100% proven. It's undeniable. The science is settled.
The science is settled. Absolutely. So these are two correlations I got from a website. It's a great website. It's tylervegan.com. It's called Spurious Correlations. It's the page on there. And this is something that I have seen that you see all the time are people making a whole lot of deal out of a correlation, which is the little R value that describes the correlation between two variables. And one of the big errors, and this goes back to what I was talking about before, about econometricians, I see economists do this more often than they should, is apply a direct correlation to a time series chart. So what that means is a number of data points that go from one period of time to another, so year to year to year, or day to day to day, and so on. And you cannot apply a correlation directly to two different variables that are time series, because they have a time factor to them, and you have to wash out that time factor before you apply a correlation. Otherwise, you end up with what's called spurious correlations, which means essentially a meaningless correlation. So there is a very popular formerly anarcho-capitalist, supposedly YouTuber, that does this all the time.
And would he be known as Send In Money Now?
Yes, absolutely. So the man that shall not be named on this radio broadcast, I don't know, can we say his name now?
Oh, Cuckwell?
No, not that one. No, the
Moldy
other one.
Moldy Nuts?
Yes, Moldy Nuts. Stefan Molyneux, who is a very prominent YouTuber that used to supposedly believe in freedom, he has a degree in history of philosophy, but he likes to try to present statistics and data analysis to support his various neo-racially driven hypotheses, as well as a lot of other stuff. But he does a lot of bad statistics when he's doing this. And one example is in his Truth About Crime video, he correlated violent crime rate with divorce rates. Now, I actually, I think there's something to the idea that divorce may contribute to violent crime, but nowhere near as much as he was trying to push. So he showed a chart of divorce over time, divorce rates over time, and violent crime rates over time. And they correlated very highly. But that correlation, it could very well be completely spurious, because he was correlating two time series charts and not taking into effect time itself as a variable, which you have to do when you do that. It's what's called a longitudinal study. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, he made another very strong or very nasty statistics sin. And he said, yes, I realize that correlation does not imply causation, but when you have a correlation of like 0.9, which would be a 90% correlation, it kind of inches closer to causation, which he is completely out of it. He's completely wrong. It has no bearing on whether one thing is caused by the other than just the added correlation itself. Because, one, the causation could be switched. It could be that violent crime rates contribute to divorce. And that isn't that far-fetched of an idea. Or two, and much more likely in this case, because if you're looking at a time series with high correlation and there's no lag, a lag meaning space between where the correlation actually happens. So one of the ways that you analyze time series is you subtract time segments so that to see where the largest correlation is. And this could be correlation with the other variable or correlation with itself, but there was no lag between the correlation here, which indicates that it's more likely that both of these variables just highly correlate with a different causal factor that's causing both of them to happen. So there's more likely to be an external factor causing this to happen. Because if you think about it, if you think that divorce rates, because the theory is that divorce causes children to grow up to be more violent. Well, if that's the case, then you would expect at least a good 10, possibly even 18 years for that kid to grow up, maybe 5 to 10 years for that kid to grow up before the violent the spike in violent crime rates happen as a reaction to the spike in divorce rates. Of course, you didn't see that.
Yeah. One of the things from what I remember, and I used to pay attention to him, and I was never really that much of a listener because I didn't want to listen to a three hour show of people calling in and crying on issues about different stuff, and I listened a couple times. It's like I had to turn it off because I just had better things to do, like I don't know, watch the water drip out of the sink. But anyway. If you listen to what he had talked about back in those days about having the intact family, using these statistics to say that divorce causes violence or violence causes divorce, whatever, that would actually fall into his confirmation bias, because everything back then revolved around peaceful parenting, intact families, and stuff like that, because he has major issues with his mother being a single mom and a bit of a floozy, as I recall.
Yeah, absolutely. All of his, at least from what I've seen, just about all of his statistical analysis and data analysis, so-called, that he does is completely driven by his own confirmation bias. And this I've done an entire presentation on how he's done really bad statistics, it's really worse when when bad statistics are used to support a position that you agree with, like anti-gun control. I'm against gun control. And he used a lot of really bad analysis to show how gun control doesn't work. Well, I agree, gun control doesn't work. But you don't need to lie with your data in order to support that fact.
Yeah. Now, going back to the rise in violent crime, what's the correlation of wartime with that? Because I believe there's also a correlation of of increases of violent crime. Basically, I think immediately after a war or within a year or two of completion, something like that.
I have no idea. I don't know. I would have to look it up. But that makes sense. What I found when I was looking at it is the crime rates started misbehaving a lot after the war on poverty started. So in 1963, LBJ started the war on his anti-poverty
the Great Society.
Programs. Right.
Yeah. And it actually went into effect in about 65.
Okay, yeah, and that actually makes more sense with the, because the poverty rate was going down before 1963, and after 1963 it kept going down for a couple of years and then leveled off. So that makes sense that it as a direct causal factor, but also the crack epidemic and there was a lot of government involvement causing this to happen, but there was a big spike there. Which was there was something else that also correlated with the beginning of the drug war, I believe, in the spike in crime.
So that would be when Reagan ramped up the drug war.
Right. Yeah.
Because Nixon declared it in was 71 or 73, something like that. It was early 70s. I know that the drug war is just a couple years younger than I am, and at least I've reached maturity and don't do stupid things anymore, unlike the drug war, which is still doing stupid stuff.
Yeah.
But, Nixon declared it and didn't do a heck of a lot with it. We've later found out through one of his henchmen, co-conspirators, talking about how the purpose of the war on drugs under Nixon was to target blacks, particularly black militants, then also the anti-war hippie crowd, because there was a correlation between being a pothead and being anti-war and then also black liberation.
Yeah, and another thing is the black community in America was doing really well in the 50s and 60s before the war on poverty began, which is something that directly negates both sides of the issue, the social justice side and the white supremacy side. So the quote unquote race realists like to push the stats about violent crime being more happening more in the black community and things like that. Well, or in black IQ rates and stuff like that, and they try to push all that information. Well, they conveniently ignore the fact that all of these things were getting better in the 50s and 60s, including the poverty rate among the black and the employment rate among the black population. Mm-hmm. They were both getting better before the war on poverty began.
Thomas Sowell had written about how black folks were doing better before the Civil Rights Act of 1965.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So, meow, meow. We'll be back.
Worms.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Meow.
So I have one more example of a bad interpretation of correlation or the correlation causation fallacy, and that's Truth Orange, which is used to be a popular anti-tobacco propaganda. Well, actually, they may still.
What's it called again?
Truth Orange. They're an anti tobacco propaganda agency.
Anti-Trump?
No, tobacco.
Okay, well, you said Truth Orange. So it tells the truth about Trump?
Yeah, good. Well, one would hope, but no, they're just anti-smoking. And, you know, I mean, do what you want, you know, you as a free, independent human being, but, you know, there are risks, health risks with smoking, and I don't deny that, but they put out a video a while back saying smokers earn 20% less cash than non-smokers. And then carry on to imply that smoking causes you to earn less money, which is a completely ridiculous interpretation of that that statement. And in reality,
so if you're a woman and a smoker, you're getting like half of the normal wage. Is that about right?
Right, exactly. And in reality, it's just as likely that people who don't make a lot of money are more stressed out and smoke more to heal their stress. Also, relatively likely is the fact that certain lower income demographics in America are more likely to smoke in general as well, which would also contribute to this. So there is no evidence that smoking actually causes you to make less money. So one of the ways that you can actually establish causation from correlation is through experimentation. But when you do that, you have control over the causal variable, over the what's called the independent variable or the explanatory variable, and you can actually affect that variable and see what happens to the response variable. Or the effect variable. And when you control what's going on and observe, then you can make a statement of likely causation. But when you're looking at observational data, which economics data is observational data, all social science data is observational data, and when you're looking at that, you cannot jump to a causal statement from a correlative statement. Or you can... correlation does not imply causation, again. So this is one of those lessons that you hear over and over again from statisticians that people just don't want to listen to.
So it sounds like you're kind of like telling people to use logic and common sense and
I know
not
who
get
does
all
that.
Warm and fuck. What's that?
I know, right? Who does that?
Yeah. Well, a lot of people, they have a confirmation bias. They want to hear something that justifies and supports what they already believe. So
yeah,
it's, you know, you see this a lot politically. The folks that it doesn't matter which politician they support, but when it's their guy that's doing something, everything's A-okay. Even if it's the same thing that the previous president or politician was doing, it's just fine. It was just bad when the other one was doing it.
Yeah.
So if that makes
absolutely.
Sense.
So. Well, and here is a good rule of thumb that really does not need to be said, but it kind of does. Never trust any sort of statistical analysis from a politician or a pundit, ever. No matter who it is, whether you think they're honest and a good politician, or an honest or and good pundit, don't trust their statistical analysis, because they will probably be applying confirmation bias to it
and trying to twist it to support with whatever it is that they have to say.
Absolutely.
So. All right, well, thank you for coming out tonight. It's always a pleasure to chat with you. Thank you, everybody, for listening. For more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com. And to get your family members registered and rounded up for the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, go to mplfest.org.
Worms.
Worms.